Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political middle, and we have on the political right my co-host, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
And on the political left, Josh Cantor, the board chair of Alliance for a Better Utah. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It's been a while since we've had you, and interested to hear your perspective, and we're going to start right out
that
with
makes one of us.
We're going to start right out with Donald Trump and this trade war with China going on. I got to tell you, this is economics from my standpoint turned upside down. He's threatening tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. He wants to increase their cost by 25% this month. The stock market's going crazy. Josh, what do you see in this? You're
well,
a business guy.
I totally agree with you. I think it's economics turned upside down. As you said, I saw a great quote this morning that said the stock market lost $13 billion for every word of his tweet.
Wow, that's clever.
Which was kind of funny.
Dan, that's clever, right? Social media.
This goes right back to U.S. consumers. We're a consumer-based economy. 70% of our economy comes in consumption. And so, you know, this global economy is what we live today, and it's our future, and we're not putting that genie back in the bottle. So rather than focus on trade deficits, which arguably don't really matter, perhaps the president and the Republican Party that supports him should go back to focusing on actual deficits that maybe do matter.
Well, Dan, that was a criticism.
No, that's fair.
Okay.
Here's what I'll say.
Well done, Josh.
Okay, we're done here.
Yeah. Economically, it is tough to argue that the tariffs make a lot of sense, but I think, again, Trump is a genius. In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Instead of everybody talking about the report, the Mueller report, and all these other things, everybody's now freaking out about tariffs, right? Mm-hmm. Market fluctuates, goes down. And by the way, when it dropped like crazy on Monday, I threw a bunch of money in because mm-hmm. that's when you do it.
Go buy. Yeah.
Yeah. So because a little known stock trip, stock tip. You never knew you'd get stock tips on the show. But always buy on tragedies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so at the end of the day, you're trying to pick up. It's terrible, but that's me. That said, no one actually thinks, from my understanding and from my inner circle, nobody actually thinks Trump means it. And what this is blustering in trade negotiations,
yeah.
right? And Trump is infamous for it. And I know what Natalie's going to say. But the president shouldn't act this way.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming. I'll just tell you that there is trade negotiations. They're stuck on a point. And I believe that this is a reset of the conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether
well,
they
Dan,
heard us
he
or
might
not,
get
I think
it. He might get it. But I just tell you that it's as if the president has a basic misunderstanding of economics. I think he thinks the Chinese are paying these tariffs, and it's not. It's the American consumer that's paying them.
So wait, is Mexico not paying for the wall either? Because I'm not prepared for this much information this morning. No,
well,
but while that may be true,
yeah.
what I do know is that our current trade policies, the way that we have functioned for the last 20 years, really, which is a lot of these agreements are that old, and if not older, but a lot of them have put a lot of American workers out of work. We are shifting further and further away from producing anything ourselves. And we're pushing a lot of, and this is the interesting part of it, is we're pushing a lot of the pollution effects and some of the other things that everybody's concerned about, greenhouse gases, et cetera. We're pushing all those to other nations where we are now one of the cleanest nations, but it's because of, from an air pollution standpoint. But we are pushing all that pollution to countries who are not regulating themselves. And so when you start to look at the long-term effects of some of our trade and some of our air regulation, we are putting ourselves in a weakened economic position long term. And I think that's what the president's trying to get at, but I'm not there, so I don't know.
Yeah. Josh, I'm sure that got under your skin a little bit. I wanted to give you a chance to say something if you wanted. If not, we'll transition.
Well, I'd actually just say something different than that. But really, that one of the things that I think really comes from the tweets like this that come out of the president is, you know, and people throughout the Obama years argued about stability of markets and stability of the economy. And here you got a guy who just, you know, throws these things out. So whether he's doing it all for all the right reasons that, Dan, you're indicating, I mean, the fact is he's throwing instability in the market. At the end of the day, does 500-point drop in the Dow Jones Industrial matter? No. I mean, this is a market that's been on fire for 10 years.
Off a
right?
record drop. Right.
Right. So who cares? But at the end of the day, it really is about stability and what this guy is doing. And he is not stable in the way he's treating the economy and the public perception.
Dan called him a genius for some of what he does. He also...
I can't decide. The only thing I can say, so the genius element,
yeah.
I can't decide sometimes.
Well, he's been a genius, I would say, because his results of his tax returns from 85 to 94 became public, and he reported losses of $1.2 billion. and everybody thinks he's just this amazing businessman. It's been interesting to watch the banter on this one.
Okay, yeah. But tax losses versus tax gains are totally different issues.
Yeah.
When you report losses, you're also, again, we're talking financial like tips and stuff.
I love it.
But if you own like for rent property and you're depreciating assets on money that you've spent over a long period of time, your balance sheet can look ugly when at the end of the day, your actual your net worth skyrockets.
Yeah.
So while your year-to-year tax may look bad because of depreciating assets, anyway.
Yeah. Josh, what did you see in this tax return release?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I mean, for me, it's, you know, first of all, going back to being a business person, at the end of the day, the reality is both what Dan's saying and these are years I think Trump probably owned casinos in Atlantic City, which all failed.
Yeah.
You know, there's the old adage, how do you make a small fortune? You start with a bigger one. maybe he's really good at that. And he did start with a small fortune from his father. So that was good for him. I think looking at these years, 1985 to 1994, part of me wants to say, who cares? I mean, this isn't what's really relevant.
It really isn't the point.
You know, what's
we
want to
see the tax
returns. Tax returns in the last 20 years or mm-hmm. last 15 years or last 10 years.
Yeah, or just because, the last couple of years before, while
sure,
he was running for president.
Sure. So, you know, this is interesting. It gives people on my side, frankly, a lot of fodder to say, oh, look, he's not the genius. I don't really like using Trump and genius in the same sentence. So, but you guys keep doing that. That's fine with me. I don't think this means much of anything.
Josh, let's stay with you for
There's
just a second.
A lot of Democrats that don't like using me and human in the same sentence
you
either.
You also have the U.S. House of Representatives about to, you know, hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress. That is a big deal. I mean, for a sitting Attorney General to be held in contempt of Congress, that makes it sound like our institutions aren't working.
Hmm. Well, I think our institutions aren't working, and I think, you know, it's a function of the partisan divide that's just getting worse and worse and worse. You know, it's hard for me because I feel like I see it coming from the other side, but I'm sure Dan has a different perspective on that. You know, I think that look at how much time our own Congressman Jason Chaffetz kept yelling, Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. I mean, you know, none of this stuff is getting the fair shake that it should and the fair investigation that it should. You know, some people are clearly looking at Barr and thinking that he came in and should be held in contempt and that ought to be heard and the Mueller report ought to be released and the fact that Trump is now using executive privilege or abusing executive privilege, in my view, in order to try to shield that from the public is really just going to further this partisan divide as opposed to just saying, you know, lay it all out there.
Yeah. Dan, quick comment there, and then I want to do one more Trump thing before we go to break.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with you slightly, Natalie, and just say when you say the institutions aren't working, there is a lot in this country that is working. There mm-hmm. are people that go to work every day at the federal government, and they are doing their jobs, and they're doing their jobs well. And despite the fact that there looks to be disarray from the Twitter world and the political world, there are a lot of people who are doing a great job and still doing their jobs on a day-to-day basis.
Could you say that they're doing that despite the leadership of this president?
I'm just saying they're getting their jobs done, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna
Does
let you put that.
Does it bother you, Dan, that the, I believe I'm
that
right,
the federal
in
government exists?
Well, no, that the Secretary of State position has been vacant now for I don't know how many months, and we have 3 active wars going on in the world.
Sure. But again, it just shows I just, political appointees don't always have the SWAT that this political appointees think they do. And that's kind of what some of these cabinet-related issues are highlighting. The institutions are fighting with each other.
It seems to me like it should be a priority to have a Secretary of State that is overseeing, you know, things going on in Afghanistan and Syria and Iraq and what's going on now in Venezuela.
What Congress has proven is that they're not quick to approve Trump nominees. And they all want to make political gains. You look at, and if you want to point to an institution that's broken, you know, the House is calling for contempt and the rest of the Senate saying meh. And it just shows how partisan this issue really is. The House is controlled by Democrats, and so they're ready for contempt of Congress charges. And the Senate is saying this is not a big deal. And it's just business as usual in Washington. Nobody should expect any different. Partisans will act partisan, and this is unfortunately just the way it is in partisan Washington.
Yeah. Hey, let's close out the segment. The director of the Census Bureau was in town yesterday in Salt Lake City. He got asked a lot about the citizenship question.
You were kind of nerding out, weren't you, a little bit?
I loved it, yeah. I got to interview him at the Gardner Institute. But citizenship question, the idea, I mean, we've had listeners ask about it, but he seemed to think that the federal government was prepared to make sure we had an accurate census with or without the citizenship question.
Yeah.
You have thoughts on that, Josh?
Well, I think I have a lot of hope that there is an accurate census, and that's certainly what's at stake. And if the census question or the citizenship question is going to discourage people from answering the census, then I don't see what the benefit is. But obviously, that's the divide between people who think the question should be asked and shouldn't be asked.
Yeah.
He basically said we have a button to push. We have with the question and without. And when the Supreme Court decides in June, we'll know exactly how to push forward.
And they're ready to go.
Yeah. Interesting.
As they should be.
And they're mapping neighborhoods. I mean, they've been, you know, I've got a bunch of kids in my neighborhood that are over, just turning over the age of 18. And they're ready for $17 an hour.
Oh, yeah. They say they'll hire 1,000 jobs in our state.
1,000 jobs in state in Utah.
And your area, wow. Riverton's one of the hard-to-count areas because it's so rapidly growing.
Yeah. And there's so many new areas in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Dan McKay and Josh Cantor. Natalie Gochner, stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Josh Cantor on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to go deeply local, deeply local. We're going to go to our record, our paper of record, the Salt Lake Tribune. Big news comes out this week that they're going to pursue an independent journalism model where they become a nonprofit. Interesting, interesting. Lots to say about this. Josh, break it down from the left, what you see in the Tribune pursuing this path.
Well, look, first, I would say, and I mean this in all good humor, I already thought they were a nonprofit. So, you know,
right,
I guess
acknowledging what they already are.
I think Paul knows that, too. So, you know, the market here
and
really,
I thought they were already
benefits.
Independent.
Yes.
You know, they say independent journalism.
Sure. Yeah.
I think the market here really, really needs the two newspapers. I think both newspapers do a terrific job, play a vital role in public discourse here in Utah. And so for me, on the left or right, I think it would be a shame to see either paper either subsumed by the other or go away. I think the pursuit of a nonprofit model makes a lot of sense. It looks really interesting. It obviously has some interesting characteristics to it, like the newspaper, the Tribune's endorsement of candidates come election time. But outside of that, it really doesn't seem to me that there's any need for a significant change. I haven't really studied this yet, but if it helps preserve the voice of the Independent Tribune, so be it.
Well, and I think that's at the heart of it. And my guess is that they have a model, a business model that isn't working. The ad revenues aren't there. The subscription didn't really help a lot. This puts them in a role where they can attract foundation dollars and other monies that support independent journalism, that want local journalism. And I think they're betting on having that. It doesn't change the fact, though, that we will still be a mid-sized metropolitan market with two newspapers.
I'll say, you know, the instant trigger for me was at least I believe that the Tribune is hemorrhaging cash, right? They've been through
millions of dollars.
Yeah, they've been through a number of these things.
Just down on that point, I mean, I think the newsroom has gone from well over 200 to like 60.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right.
It's stunning.
Well, and think about how fast the print has dropped off as well, right?
Yeah.
So the print base itself, employees, you start to think of how many people by attrition people are leaving. And you think about that. Now, the Huntsman family, you know, my immediate self was thinking, well, this is a very good tax planning vehicle for the Huntsman family. I mean, if they're putting money into it and it's a for-profit business that's failing, right, the only way to actually have those contributions to the organization matter, at least from a tax planning standpoint, is to make it a nonprofit element, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you at least get those cash contributions. But to Natalie's point, even bigger, is there are groups out there that want to invest in local news and making sure there's always the perception that the Deseret News has a little bit too friendly to the church perspective, right? I think there are a lot of Deseret News reporters who would take umbrage with that characterization. But at the same time, you have that. And then, you know, so the church gets to tell its story, I guess, in some ways through the Des News. And then you have the Trib, who is supposed to be offering this counterpoint to that perspective. And so in that way, having both is very valuable. And I think I just said the Tribune was valuable. Now I've talked myself in a circle.
You can do something more in the gripe if you want. But there's an opportunity in my judgment being missed here. And that is, I do not think that the market can support two newspapers here. And I think that the real play would be to get the Deseret News and Salt Lake Tribune to join forces and have an independent model that separates the monkey that's on the back of the Deseret News, that they're owned by the know, LDS Church, and creates a much more well-funded operation because they're unified. And I do think you can put a firewall in protection of the importance of the Fourth Estate.
Yeah.
So, well, something we'll keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Another issue that I think is worth talking about for just a second. Dan, your family's made news. I don't know how else to do this, but Riverton City Council passes an anti-abortion resolution. Tawny McKay, Dan's wife, is the sponsor of that.
Yeah.
This is this caught a lot of media attention. I mean, Riverton City has never had this much media attention in its history, I would guess.
Yeah, that's
possibly
true. Is that
fair? Maybe.
Mean, and you know, it's and you can argue for good, bad, or indifferent, right? I will tell you, my wife listens to the show, so Natalie, don't get me in trouble here.
Hi, Tawny.
I'll just tell you, if there is one subject that my wife is passionate about is abortion. And I remember, was it a year ago or something? And it was kind of as we were getting ready for, no, it wasn't a year ago, it wasn't that long ago, 6 months ago. We were getting ready for the session, and my wife was, you know, expressing disappointment that her senator hadn't done enough to, you know, to combat abortion on the state level. And so I think that thought initially said, well, maybe there's something I can do from a city council level. And then there was a resolution that was passed kind of similar to this that was in New Mexico. And New Mexico, I can't remember what city it was, they passed a resolution in favor of the right to life. And it sparked an idea in my wife. And here we are, you know, a month later after we started thinking about it. And if people, and this is what I keep telling people, I mean, go to my Twitter feed, it's at Dan McKay. The
M-C-C-A-Y.
Resolution,
M-C-C-A-Y.
So the resolution is actually really interesting because it is divergent a little bit from Republican politics. If you go read the resolution talks about the need for affordable health care. It talks about the need for, you know, access to affordable birth control. It talks about, I mean, you go down the list of making sure you're covering
sex education.
Sex education.
Rape, incest, health of the mother.
Yeah, all those things are included.
I know these are all code speak, but I think our listeners follow it.
But if you go through and you actually read the resolution of what she's done, honestly, I think she's given what I think is a medium ground to how we can in the future be building a bridge on this issue as opposed to constantly fighting over, you know, it's my uterus, no, it's yours, you know, and that back and forth conversation.
Josh,
it's just terrible.
Josh,
so.
Dan's in the room here, it's his wife, but be honest from the, you know, exchange of ideas. What do you think of this?
Well, this is tough with Dan sitting next to me.
It's okay.
But I will say, you know, I do think it was inappropriate. I don't think this is really in the purview of the Riverton City Council. I think Dan just said that this was basically his wife's personal passion and the city council is there to do city business. My problem in many respects with the resolution as it was passed, I do think it had some, you know, light language as Dan referred to about some of these things.
Some balance.
It could have been much stronger if it was really after a comprehensive solution to reducing abortion, which I think we all agree on the left and the right is an admirable goal. It could have been much stronger about its talk about access to healthcare, about sex education, about calling on the legislature to, you know, allow or the school board to allow a much broader comprehensive sex education bill to get passed. It could have talked about expanding the EITC. It could have done lots of different things to bring God into it, to bring religion into it, to use some of the fear mongering that I think is typical on both sides of these issues. Okay, both sides, but certainly from the right. On the abortion issue, false narratives like saying that doctors are essentially or alluding to the idea that doctors are being forced to perform abortions, which is wholly untrue. It does something I don't think needed to be done.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, to my wife's point, though, you know, I think she's right about this. If you, you know, from a city standpoint or from a school board standpoint or from a mosquito abatement board, at the end of the day, we just need people to stand up. Whatever the issue is, we need people to stop being asleep at the switch on any public civic issue, whatever it may be. Stop just deferring to people and just assuming that somebody else has it figured out. It's that age-old adage, if you wait for somebody else to do it, it never gets done.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, then let's get another McKay in the legislature.
I don't know if I have
Dan,
that
Dan, I have not read the resolution, and yeah. based on your comments, I will read it. It sounds yeah. to me like you she tried to carve out a middle path, and I'll do that and maybe
the,
have
and
more
comments,
to say about it.
The comments
I just
about
have
God,
to, oh, and, just, I, and oh, Josh has given me a copy of it. But I will say that it is important to me from the political middle that other things are not being ignored at the expense of this policy. In other words, whether it's affordable housing or paying for growth and the transportation needs of Riverton City, yeah. they can't get on this kind of track if they're avoiding those essential roles of local government. Reminds me, I mean, I'm not saying a direct yeah. comparison, but Mayor Rocky Anderson did a lot of things that were very much in the sort of, you know, what
ethosphere,
national,
right? yeah.
international,
sure.
Ideological sphere at a time when we needed the soccer stadium to be in Salt Lake City.
And
sure.
not,
what
not
I'm
just
saying?
That, can I say that one of the other problems I think that comes from things like this is that it puts a test. You know, are we going to now have city council races where people are asking their city council candidates, well, what's your position on abortion? What's
oh,
your
goodness.
Position on immigration?
That happens in Salt Lake City. Every one of those council members is running to prove they're more gay than the other one. I love them all. I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent, but every council member is out there trying to convince, and it's happening in the Democratic Party as well on a national level. So saying it's not happening on the other side of the race is ridiculous, in my opinion. But I will go even further to say no one, of course, paid attention to the mayor's report in the same council meeting where he gave a 45-minute overview of the planned budget that's going in. Of course, nobody did anything on that in the budget, so I just want everyone to know
no
the Riverton
on that.
City is more than handling their budget and preparing for it, just no one cared.
Dan and Josh, we're almost out of time, but I want to talk just briefly about tax reform. We got the announcement of the Gang of Eight or however many people it is that are going to be helping think through the policy. I'm hearing more and more that the income tax earmark may be at risk. And I just wanted to ask you about that. So, Josh, this is the idea that all income tax dollars are devoted to education in this state, and that's creating this structural budget problem for us. And just by removing that earmark, you could save a lot of struggle with tax reform. Curious from the left what you think there.
Well, on that particular issue, I think there's no question that all of the earmarks and loopholes in the tax system really are problematic and cause some of these structural problems, and particularly as the economy has shifted. And I think there's a very truthful narrative around about the economy shifting away from, you know, some of the consumer goods and into services. The big question with respect to that income tax earmark in the Constitution is certainly, at least in part, is how far can you trust the legislature to live up to any agreement
education.
To continue to fund education?
Yeah.
And so I think if you can come up with a solution to that, that might be really interesting. But tax reform is a really, really tricky subject. And not the Gang of Eight. I heard it called the Dream Team, and that really disturbs me from the left because the Dream Team apparently includes two women, two Democrats, and one of them fills both of those spots. So it's and not a single minority on this Dream Team of experts going out and looking at tax reform.
Josh came to the program prepared, Dan.
I came ready.
You go, Josh.
I've been here before, and I got my butt kicked, and I'm coming to fight.
Dan,
so,
quick
so
comment.
I have drawn a graph. Can everyone see it on the radio?
Yeah, it's got a left.
It
it's got an X and Y axes.
And really, you can't see this, obviously, but we show that WPU spending does not follow income tax. You know,
weighted pupil unit.
The weighted pupil units are. I start using
the standardized funding per student.
Yeah. So that does not necessarily fund trends in the income. And what happens is, in the high times, we are able to commit more in the WPU, and we want to do that anyways, and we've done it at record levels over the last 8 years. That said, when things are down, education turns to the general fund and says, we need money out of transportation to keep education going. And so if we don't have a shored up general fund, the education budget will be in bad shape during the down times. And we're always
trying
to manage
that. Are you okay losing the earmark?
The earmark has to go. Do you know how many states? Yeah. So there are 50 states in the union. How many have, besides ours, an earmark for education and income tax?
Yeah.
It's zero now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and just to the listeners, that earmark has been a myth. because we've been able to wash higher ed into it. But that, but we're now to the point where it's going to mean something.
So there was a brilliant proposal last year that I thought was actually very
filled
with
merit. Can you make this your gripe? Because we have to go to gripe.
I'm just going to say my gripe. I'll skip off of that and just say my gripe. My gripe is people be civil. You know, when you disagree, Josh and I are sitting here. He's on the far right or far left way. You know, he might, I don't know, we might touch eventually if he keeps coming left, go all the way around. He's on the far left of issues, but we're civil, right? And
absolutely,
we can do this kind of stuff civilly. There's no reason to do some of the things we're doing to each other about politics.
Yeah, thanks. Josh, you have a gripe for us?
Yeah, I'd say the same thing, actually. I was calling it bumper sticker politics. I'm really tired of bumper sticker politics, and I think that's both sides. Again, for me, primarily coming from the right, but it's referring to immigrants as drug traffickers and rapists. Using religious liberty as a shield. And even I was really disturbed when I saw Amy Winter Newton had an op-ed this morning in the D News and talking about the GOP and people coming back to the GOP and kind of claiming that the GOP is the party of life, liberty, and freedom as though Democrats are against those things. And that's not a civil way to have a conversation.
Yeah, interesting. My gripe, I just want to celebrate the fourth estate, the media. And with this new thing with the Tribune, we need a healthy media. It helps our state better be better. So
she's
I hope they're successful. I
she's
hope they're successful.
At me, though I, you know, don't disagree with
I love it. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Dan McKay and Josh Cantor. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.